Welcome back. I see our ice cream story from yesterday is gone national. No mention of the program or Highland Radio in it, but sure, look, who cares? It's fine. But Grainne Doherty extensively quoted. She said, "Someone has seen this cone of a giant ice cream cone has appeared in a living room. Someone knows something about this." So as I say, it's just strange the stories that get picked up on, but. The big stolen ice cream cone has gone national. So there you go. Right, okay. Some of your comments coming in so far this morning. Quite a few of you texting in on the vaping issue. Hi, Greg. As a smoker for over 40 years, I tried everything, even hypnosis. I started vaping 3 years ago, and after 3 days, I found improvements in my breathing and stamina. So it definitely works for me, but I would never encourage anyone to stop vaping or smoking. And I think that's a really rounded comment there, and it's worked for you. And it sounds like you're not also vaping and smoking. And I'm glad that your health... that you feel better in your health and I presume in your pocket as well. Re-teens vaping and smoking, when they're teaching sex education at school, two placenta should be shown on video that the baby has been fed on for 9 months in the womb, one from a smoker, which is very runny and falls apart, and compare it with a non-smoker, which is very sturdy and healthy. It should be shown which would stick in teens' minds. Re-smoking during pregnancy, it's a real eye-opener. Okay. Good luck. Sorry, I'll come back to that good luck thing. I'll just do the vaping ones first. Question, why was this vaping given the go-ahead in the first place? This could have been banned when it was developed in the first place. It's like as if they put these things on the market to get children and adults hooked and then banned them. How did this ever get on the market in the first place, they say? Well, look, it was an alternative to smoking. It is, we don't really accept it in this country, but it's broadly accepted to be safer than smoking, though you're discouraged from vaping long term. But then the companies started targeting young people with different types of flavor, bubble gum flavor, ice cream flavor, and they put them in sexy containers. You know, when I say that, by the way, I mean, you know, really marketable ones, sexy in a marketing sense. And then also they started paying TikTokers and YouTubers to start using them and blow rings and make them cool. They actively targeted young people. And the smoking industry bought big time into it because this could see what's happening. So we have a big business in the smoking industry, in the vaping industry, that purposely, even though they would have known that this gets lots of young people, and this is it's not criminal because no one's been found criminally liable for it. But if you think about it, we have multi-billion euro companies actively targeting in 2023 and before, of course, actively targeting a product which is damaging to young people at young people. You know, someone in their mid-50s who smokes is not buying a little fancy-looking thing with a light at the bottom that tastes of bubblegum. That's a 14, 13, 12-year-old. They've actively targeted them. That's what they've done to our children. And I think people should be more angry about what some of these companies are trying to do to our children, because it's not just by happen chance that young people started vaping. It's because they decided to try and get these young people vaping to make their millions and their billions. And now we've got a really significant proportion of the young teenage population who vape. And then once they have that nicotine addiction, who's to say when they ban the vapes that they might go, well, I can get cigarettes handier, because they'll need to feed them. If you've never had an addiction to nicotine, you might not get it. But you don't just go, right, I'm not vaping anymore because I can't buy them in the local newsagents. Now, I hope most people in shops around the Northwest are responsible in terms of who they sell these products to. But you just don't switch off an addiction to nicotine. So people are going to have to deal with that. And, you know, young people might pick up a cigarette, as they are already doing, but even more so as it becomes maybe easier to get a cigarette than it is a vape. I don't know. A navy and green wallet with a white stripe was lost on Tuesday in Letterkenny Shopping Centre around lunchtime. It contained some very sentimental items. We've got a contact number here for the owner. So if you found a navy and green wallet with a white stripe, they're very interested in its return because it has some very sentimental items within. Good luck to the Niamh Mura Club. Lower Rosses on hosting the All-Ireland Gaeltacht Club Finals this June bank holiday weekend. A huge undertaking for a small rural club, bringing hundreds to the Rosses. Gwydor from Mayo, Galway, Cork, Kerry, Waterford, Meath, Dublin, Belfast and Donegal. A marvellous idea to book accommodation with host families normally keeping Irish college students every summer. Brendan Devaney on the DL Debate previewed that, by the way. So if you are interested in that, you want to hear more about it, on our website in the playback section, go to the latest DL Debate and Brendan Devaney's discussing that as well. Hi, Greg. That man looking for the mica, looking after the mica, says he's making the cut point at 2,000 homes. So what about the rest of the people? Do they have just to wait to see if they get anything? Well, you see, presumably if that action is successful, they will take a number. I'm not a legal expert, never claimed to be, but we don't do class actions here. So there is a group of people there and they are taking test cases that cover a lot of the scenarios and realities of those affected by defective concrete. And if one is found to be successful, well, then it should daisy chain from there. Because if the government were to lose one case, presumably another other defendants were to lose one case, they're not going to go and actively defend every single case because the outcome might be the same. So it sets a precedent. So presumably, if there is not a pre-trial agreement, if it goes the right way of that action, it paves the way for everyone to get the same treatment. I would imagine that's the way it is. So even if you're not in that first cohort, I would imagine the groundwork will be set for everyone who's affected by that, if it is successful. Back to vapes. A caller says that there are a number of copycat vapes on the market and for sale in bars that are more dangerous, again, as they're not to any regulatory standard. There does not seem to be anything done by revenue about this either. Wait till you see what happens to vaping in the next budget, because revenue have been keeping their claws out of it to some extent. With this change in legislation, I would expect you to see quite a significant inroads into VAT and tax and stuff from revenue in the next budget, would be a little prediction of mine. Hi, Greg. Phones and social media have ruined everyday life. No one speaks to each other anymore. My husband's addicted to his phone. We don't speak anymore, and it definitely has an impact on relationships. It's sad, really. And it's sad that you feel like that, really, that, you know, you feel that your partner doesn't speak to you anymore because they're addicted to their phone. And they say it's an impact on relationships. Is that something, a view that you share? It's no harm having this conversation, because sometimes maybe we do stuff that we don't really realise that it's bothering maybe the person that we're with. So are you concerned about someone's involvement in social media or their phone, or is it a problem that you have or someone in your family has? How is it impacting? Or were you on social media? Did you come off it? How did your life change? I'd be really interested in that. Give us a text on 086 60 25000, or WhatsApp that number too, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Rosemary, Beth and Marie have all joined watching the show online. Just to remind you, go on to the YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. You can watch the show today and every day there, and also get subtitles as well on YouTube and Facebook if you are hard of hearing but you want to know what's happening across the Northwest. Lots of people log on for that reason, which is why I started doing it to begin with. That was the initial reason. And also, you can watch live on our website. Orla, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you getting on?
Surviving.
Good stuff. That's what we're all at. Nice to speak to you, though, Orla. We were talking about rubbish and dumping of rubbish. What's your observation, Orla?
To be honest, we were late getting out in the evening. We are in Buncrana and headed on to, I'm sure you know, the wee beach called Dunree.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful scenic area, absolutely gorgeous. And to be then just landed on the beach with this debris piled high from anything from barbecue remains to bottles and just general rubbish. Now, I'm not saying that could have been from, might have been an overnight thing. It might have been just prior to we came down. But it was awful just to see that people are in general are not lifting their rubbish at all. It's just a disgrace to see. And it was so disheartening because the town of Buncrana has always went to great lengths of, you know, the tidying the town, of volunteers out cleaning up, you know, all the time. Mm-hmm. And then you go to a beautiful scenic area you know, to just to sit and relax and chill out on an evening and to be confronted with some rubbish, at, you know, a good part, you know, a lot of rubbish really. That evening, it was awful.
And Aura, was it sort of scattered around in different places, or had there been a party in one particular place, or what do you think happened?
Well, to me, it seemed to be like it was all in one part. Like it was all piled in one part. Now, I have to say that we looked around to see there is lacking, and I mean the lacking of bins is unbelievable, because people are not, they are going to leave stuff if they're not going to see bins. If there had been at least a bin nearby, I'm sure that the people maybe wouldn't have dump them where they did, because from where you go to the Dunree Beach, you come off the main road down like a sand dune onto the beach, and for the people then to transport the rubbish from the beach, well, that's more than a lot to take when they're taking their own bits.
Yeah, but if everyone talk about, you see, I think the jury's a wee bit out on bins, Orla, because you know yourself, you could put two bins at the mouth of that beach entrance. They would get full in 2 or 3 hours, and next thing, everyone's just dumping their rubbish at the bins. You know, I think people maybe are moving away from bins because they just become hotspots for all manner of dumping. Because next thing, you know, there's four bags of household waste around the bin as well. You know, you've seen that site. I'm not saying there shouldn't be bins there, but I just wonder if they're moving away for bins for the reasons I've just outlined.
Well, when we were entering, going into the actual dunes that takes you to the beach, there's like a wee message saying from probably local people there that probably has seen more than their fair share of rubbish being dumped. Like, please take your rubbish home.
Yeah.
And that is only fair to say, please take your rubbish home. I mean, it's not going to take a lot to put stuff into a bag the way you put in the stuff into a bag for picnic.
Yeah, for sure.
Why don't you take that stuff back home?
And I worry also, too, about, if you bring your toddler or your pet down, for that matter, you know, these barbecues...
Oh, there's no poo bins. There are no poo bins.
Yeah, well, now there should be poo bins, but also...
poo bins either.
Yeah, but also, you know, the old hot barbecues, hot stones, bits of burning timber that could still be there, you know, like, it's just really worrying. So there's no poo bins at the beach there,
don't we? No poo bins, none, zero, zero.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Okay, Orla.
No bins.
What can we do, though? What do we do, Orla?
I think people have to be a wee bit more responsible, but they have to be given
a chance.
You know, like a chance, maybe like even poo bins there by the side, beside bags, because they do it in the town. I think there should be a bins, and I think they should be collected maybe. I don't know how often they get their rubbish collected in Dunree. You know, so I think if they're given, you know, bins and stuff, that the people maybe take a wee bit more responsibility.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, thanks for helping us highlight that, Orla. Have a lovely day. Hope you enjoyed the beach after you got over that. But thank you very much indeed. Okay. Michelle O'Neill is Deputy Director of the Health Information and Quality Authority. And we're speaking to Michelle after HICWA published its international review of the epidemiology of long COVID. Its review was at the request of the Health Service Executive to inform its long COVID model of care. Michelle, thank you very much for holding and joining us. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
It's hard to put the finger or the thumb on long COVID, really, isn't it? It's one of those conditions that it's hard for someone to say how it might affect one person and then another who might have a completely different experience.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Long COVID is a very complex condition. It has a wide range of symptoms. Some of these can be debilitating, but they do, as you say, vary significantly from person to person. What we found in our review, I guess, is the common symptoms were fatigue, brain fog, memory loss or confusion, loss of sense of smell and shortness of breath. So that will be the most common presentation of long COVID that's reported out there at the moment.
And it can be really debilitating for people, can't it? It can have a real impact on their lives.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, some of the studies that we looked at, there is a significant impact on individuals' day-to-day activity of living. So yes, this can be quite a significant burden on individuals.
Obviously, we can talk about what the HSE might do and what they might put in place. But is there any conversation as to how we get people, you know, diagnosed at GP level, for an example? Because it sounds like you might present and there could be crossovers with other stuff, and we don't want people going to a whole load of consultants and tying up time and all that type of stuff. So at primary care level, that's where we really need to start to get the awareness and knowledge out. If it's not already there, I'm sure it is. But do you get where I'm coming from?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think if an individual is experiencing long-lasting symptoms after they've recovered from their initial COVID infection, then absolutely the GP is the first person to go to so they can get a diagnosis, because it might be, like you said, other conditions that are going on, or it could be long COVID. So it is at that local GP level where an individual should really be their first point of call.
Do we know if certain groups of people are more prone to long COVID than others?
Yes, we do. That was one of the things we found in our reviews. I mean, although we did find long COVID in all age groups and all populations, older people, women, and those who ended up in hospital because of their initial COVID infection were more likely to end up with long COVID.
Now, when I'm out and about just chatting to people, Michelle, and I hope you understand there's no ulterior motive to this question. If they are still not feeling great, they often self-diagnose and put it down to the vaccine rather than maybe about of COVID. How are we certain, or can we ever be certain, that people are suffering the effects of having COVID previously and not some sort of a reaction, as some people might think, to a vaccine, for an example?
Well, I guess this study looked at, you know, we looked at 51 studies internationally, and we looked at people who had, you know, all who had infections with COVID initially. So a lot of these individuals and these studies would have begun before vaccines were widely available. So we obviously saw, you know, experiences of long COVID before vaccine was introduced. So we do know that this isn't directly related to vaccine. It existed before vaccines were in place. If you remember, COVID was with us, unfortunately, quite a while before we got with vaccines, and even though they did come in quite quickly. So, you know, we can be certain that this is something that existed before the vaccines became available and widely used.
And we talk of long COVID, but is there any evidence in these studies as to how long it lasts? You know, do the effects of long COVID fade without medical intervention, or has enough time passed for us to know that, I wonder?
Enough time hasn't yet passed. Now, we did look at studies that go up to 2 years post that initial infection, and we did see that for some people, yes, their symptoms do resolve, but for some people, they do continue on. So we are getting a sense that this can be a long-lasting condition.
And also, too, there was an analysis of the pressure this puts on the health service, because quite a large percentage, looking at the figures here, do report or have long COVID in the general population.
Yes, I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty as how many people have long COVID out there, but certainly the rates we saw in the studies we looked at varied from 15% to almost 50% reporting some symptoms of long COVID. This obviously can put pressure on the health system, but again, it's not everybody, you know, there's quite a variation in what people will experience and how much this impacts them and how much healthcare they were required to live with the experiences of long COVID.
Yeah, and you mentioned the most common symptoms include fatigue, brain fog, memory loss and or confusion, shortness of breath and loss of smell, but also to people who had been hospitalised before they got COVID or had pre-existing conditions can find worse outcomes, or conditions they already had worsening.
Yes, absolutely. So this is something we're seeing, that I guess there's three kind of things with long COVID. You can have a continuation of the symptoms that you experience when you get COVID initially. So, for example, that could be a continuation of your loss of smell, it doesn't come back, or, you know, you continue to experience breathlessness. You can also have individuals, like you said there, who have underlying conditions before they get COVID, and these get worse. So, for example, something like asthma or kidney diseases can potentially get worse after you've had COVID. And then we have other individuals who develop new symptoms entirely. So after the initial infection with COVID subsides, you know, they can go on to develop other conditions, you know, fatigue and memory loss, which which can be long lasting.
And finally, this review was at the request of the HSC with a view to it informing its long COVID model of care. Did this make any recommendations in that regard, or was the information presented for the HSC to do with what it will?
I think one of the things we found is that, you know, long COVID is a complex condition which affects multi-organ and multi-different specialities will need to be involved in the care for people with long COVID. So that was probably one of our key findings for the HSE, is that multidisciplinary clinics are probably required to adequately meet the needs of those who are experiencing long COVID.
Michelle, thanks for your time this morning. I appreciate it. Michelle O'Neill, Deputy Director of the Health Information and Quality Authority. Good morning, Greg. The McIntyre family from Navan got chosen to live in One Aran Island for a year and enjoyed the change of life so much they're going to stay there. It'd be good if you got an interview with them on Highland Radio. Thanks, Danny. Yeah, sure. I'm sure it's probably in the offing. I can see if you're dependent on the type that you are, that you could see that as a nice way to live your life. I couldn't do it because of work and other things, but yeah, we can see where the attraction comes from. Right, okay, we're going to be talking now about the findings of the census for Donegal. Deirdre Lynch is a senior statistician in the census division. Good morning to you, Deirdre. How are you keeping? Oops, you're muted or I can't hear you. I don't know what's going on. Should we try that one more time just to see if we're connected to audio? No, I will kick you out unceremoniously and bring you back in if you don't mind just holding with us there, Deirdre. Okay, we'll get that sorted in a second. Any questions or comments on the census? 086 60 25,000, by the way, or you can give Caroline a call. She's waiting for your calls on 074 91 25,000. Some people on here complain about giving children vape and it not being tested or have any long-term effects. The same ones who got their children jabbed with not a question asked. Not really quite sure, but anyway. What if Gardaí had an ability to fine on the spot for littering? We'd love to see. I mean, I don't like laws and too many of them, sorry. Do you know what I mean? Big brother, all in your stuff. I'm not a big fan of that. But we're getting to the point now in terms of dog littering and in terms of waste littering that the softly, softly, nicely, nicely approach doesn't seem to be working. Another caller says the authorities who put bins at scenic locations should remember that they will be filled and therefore must be emptied. That's the big thing, you see. A contractor should be employed to empty the bins daily in the summertime. Every other county does this. Why can't we? OK, let's see if Deirdre can hear us now, or can we hear Deirdre? Are you there, Deirdre?
Hi, yeah, I'm here. Hopefully you can hear me.
I can, loud and clear. How are you keeping?
Good, thanks. Good. Delighted to be here to present the findings of Census 2022 results.
Yeah, I mean, you're a statistician and you must love numbers, and everyone in the CSO must, because there was an awful lot of stuff to go through here, wasn't there? Not just nationally, but then just to break it down and all the various demographics and what have you.
Absolutely. So census night was the 3rd of April last year. So we were a year compiling the forms, scanning them, process them and analysing them. So there's a multitude of questions and analysis to be done. And I suppose what I can take you through today is the summary findings. Today is the first publication. Yesterday was the first publication. We have detailed analysis on a number of variables, and we will have results being published throughout the year until December. So lots of information to come.
Right, Donegal's population grew by 5% from around about 7,892 to 167,084. That's between 2016 and April 2022. But it was one of the lowest increases that we saw, Deirdre.
Yeah, so when we look at the state, we see the population is 5.15 million, which is an increase of 8%. Donegal has increased about 7,900 persons, which is a 5% increase. But what's really positive about this is that every county has experienced an increase in the population, which does differ to that of 2016, where both Mayo and Donegal actually had a population decrease. What I can say as well is the 5% increase in Donegal fall is similarly to what's experienced in other counties like Kilkenny and Tipperary. But what's really positive as well is that the Donegal population is actually the highest it was in 96 years. So in 1926, it was around 152,000. So all in all, it's actually really positive news for Donegal.
And people are living longer, which is great. We're seeing an increase in people that are living to 85.
Absolutely. So we're seeing the average age has increased. So in 2016, it was 37 years of age, and now it's actually increased to 39. So it's we have an aging population. When we look at the proportion of the population and the specific age groups, we see that 0 to 10 year olds are down 10%. 25 to 39 year olds are down 4%. But then those 85 year olds and above are up 25%. So it is very clear, and it has been the trend for the last number of centuries. Periods that the population is getting older, and there's more people in the older age categories than the younger.
But we must be having less babies.
So what I can say is we do look at what's driving the population growth in the country, and that's ultimately the natural increase, so the difference between births and deaths and then migration. So in 2022, there was less of an impact from the natural increase. So it was driven more by migration, so people moving into Ireland and around. And what I can say from that is really interesting. Dual citizenship, which is where people have Irish and another combination of a citizenship, for example, Irish UK or Irish American, these have increased by 63%, which is really interesting. And the top categories of them is Irish UK, Irish American, Irish Polish, and lastly Irish Australian. So they're kind of the top categories. So we are growing older and we are growing more diverse.
In terms of emigration you talked of, do you have anything in front of you there that indicates the level of emigration in Donegal 2016 to 2022?
So unfortunately, we actually, while we did capture information on where these people were a year ago or when they settled in Ireland, we haven't got that information to hand yet. That will be published at the end of next month. So that's our June publication. But I do have figures specific to dual Irish persons in Donegal. So what I can say on that is that there's actually been 79% increase in Donegal. So in 2016, there were 2,400 persons that stated they had dual citizenship. This rose by nearly 2,000 up to 4,000, over 4,300. So really interesting stuff there as well. So that's actually above what we've seen at the state. The state's seen a 63% increase on average, whereas Donegal is actually experiencing near 80%.
Now since the census night, the population has increased significantly in Donegal because of the war in Ukraine and other factors as well. Is there a supplementary, that sort of gives us a full picture of that? Because as I say, you know, it simply wasn't captured on census night.
Yeah. So what I can tell you is that census night was on the 3rd of April last year. So I'm sure your listeners will remember when that was, around the time that Ukrainians were moving to Ireland. Our figures that are published yesterday and on our website include Ukrainians. What I can say is that we do have a population concept where we publish some results for people who include the visitors on census night with an intention, who are not usually resident in Ireland, and other figures for people who have the intention to stay in Ireland. Ukrainians are included in all our tables online. The public will see that there are some where Ukrainians that are intent to stay in Ireland are included. So what I can say is there at the point in time, which is what census measures, one night of the year, there was 18,000 Ukrainians in Ireland at that point.
What can you tell us about employment figures in Donegal and nationally?
So interestingly, actually, what I would think is interesting here is that there is actually a new question asked on working from home. And we actually did look at this when we looked at people who were employed and how they were where they were working. So, and interestingly, there are more people at work in Ireland. Fewer people are looking after the family home, and the retired population is up from 8% in 1986 to 16% in 2022. So again, that kind of blind somewhat to the aging population. But we did look at employment by sector. Manufacturing was up 21%, and the construction industry at the state level was up 32%. There was over 20% more workers in public sector dominated categories. And as I said earlier, the working from home question. So this question was decided by public consultation before the pandemic. So the question was phrased, have you ever worked from home and how many days from home you do work? So nearly 750,000 people, a third of the workers, indicated that they had worked from home for at least or part of their week. And this was particularly interesting among different industries and different occupations. Workers in business, media and public service were the most likely to work from home, with 80% of them working from home at some point. And workers then in elementary administration or service occupations were least likely to work from home. So this would be hairdressers, the post office service, this sort of thing. We also looked at people commuting to work. So people, 1.2 people drove to work, which was up 4% since 2016. This was 4% fewer commuting by train, Lewis or Dart. But I think it is interesting to note that that was probably changed due to people working from home. So it's more people staying at home. And what is interesting about the home place now as well is that we did ask a question for occupied households, so only the households that had people in them in 2022. What's happening there? So there's actually a higher proportion of people renting, which it can be seen across all counties. So at the state level, 66% of households own their own home with or without a mortgage, and 28% were renting. But when we focus specifically on Donegal for these statistics, we can see that it's actually quite higher, more people. So 70% own their own home with a mortgage or without a mortgage, and less, so 23% are renting in Donegal. So really interesting when you hone in on the specific county analysis there.
And in terms of how many people living in a household, that's increased.
So interestingly, we actually report on the average household size. So it's the number of people per the household. That in 2022 was 2.74, which was directly comparable with 2016. There was minimal change. It was slightly down compared to 2016. But it will be interesting to hone in on these statistics more. So we haven't done it for today, but in our August publication, we will be looking at adult children living at home.
That's going to be
really interesting to see what actually is going on there and where they are focused and where what their attributes are, what their occupations are, and this sort of thing. So it will be interesting. So we haven't got that to hand today, but the average household size was 2.74. So very comparable. And when we look at the different geographical levels, we can see that it ranged from 2.48 in Dublin to 3.04 in Fingal and Meath. So there is quite a diverse range across counties as well there.
They're not emptying the nest anymore because we're not producing as much children, but they're not sodding off. Just on carers and the amount of, do you have those to hand, Deirdre? Because I always find that information really quite important.
So it has increased. I haven't got the figures to hand at the moment, but we do have detailed analysis on the website.
Excellent.
So if your listeners log on to cso.ie/census, they will see the extensive analysis there. What I can say is that they have increased. The number was 195,000 before. It's now 299,000. So that's a 54% increase. So again, there is the question whether it has increased due to the aging population and children looking after their elderly parents. So we'll look into all this in a bit more detail in the months to come.
And also too, it's good to see that the number of people speaking Irish in Donegal has increased, because a lot of effort's been happening in not only just in the Gaeltacht, but also in and around Letterkenny to try and encourage the speaking of Irish. That seems to be bringing some results.
So in the question on the census form, we ask, can you speak Irish? Approximately there's an additional 6% of people who are stating that they can speak Irish. But interestingly, we also look at the frequency of Irish spoken. So this would tell us kind of the daily Irish speakers, which some people often use as a better indication of who was fluent. So that has actually decreased slightly 2.5% at the state level. So that's gone down 1,800 since 2016. When we hone in on Donegal, although we're looking from a much smaller base, 181 less people said they could speak Irish. So that's again just over 2%. So it's quite interesting. But in terms of the Gaeltachts, so those figures I spoke of there are at county level, but when we look at Donegal Gaeltacht, we can actually see that the population in the Gaeltacht has increased by just under 4%. So it's gone up 874 persons. So that's quite interesting to look at as well.
Right. Okay. And just some of these changes can be changes in population. So people who never had any Irish coming into a county, for an example, could affect that percentage, doesn't it? It doesn't necessarily mean less people are, but it's less people as proportion maybe of their overall population, just as an aside, yeah?
Yeah, as a side, I suppose, in terms of the population growth, so the base number, that when we speak of percentages in terms of a 6% increase, the larger the baseline, so the previous population there, the less significant the percentage would be. So the more people in a county, because that brings me back to the earlier point when you had said that Donegal increased at a lower rate than other counties. While that is true, is some other counties, like just say for example Kilkenny, so Donegal experienced a growth of 7,800 persons, whereas Donegal experienced 4,900.
Yes.
And just say Cavan 5,500.
And three people could move to Leitrim and that would increase it by 10%.
Exactly. So it's all relative. Okay. And in proportion. So it is important to look, I suppose, at the figures and the, right, the percentages which indicate the rate.
And very, very lastly, anything on vacant property levels in Donegal, or does that come up in a later?
That information. So that, okay, will be our July publication.
Okay.
We've only analysed occupied households for the moment.
Excellent.
So we're still working on that, and your listeners can log on in July to see information on that.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Deirdre. Really appreciate it. Have a lovely day. Take care of yourself. That's Deirdre Lynch, senior statistician in the Census Division. Just on that Irish figure, the number of people aged 3 and over who said that they could speak Irish in Donegal was 59,130. That's compared to 56,738 in 2016. So that's a reasonable increase, isn't it? Within this figure, 7,750 said they spoke Irish daily, while 4,533 spoke Irish weekly. And just a couple of other things here. There's far more women than men in Donegal. 84,289 of you are women. 82,795 were male. So that means effectively there's 98 fellas for every 100 women. So as I say, more stats coming out, don't you know, as they release them. Okay, let us take a break as we line up our next guests. We'll be back with you shortly. In studio with me now is Kilmacrenan's Vicky McGill. Hi, Vicky.
Hi, how are you?
Great to have you in with us. And we're joined also by your dad, Michael. Hi, Michael.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to see you too as well.
Thank you.
Right, Vicky, congratulations on being part of the All-Ireland Ladies basketball team. You're heading to Berlin,
yeah,
for the World Special Olympics competition in June. How exciting is it?
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's a great achievement because my daddy and ourselves opened it in 1998.
Yes.
And it's very brilliant. Like, I'm happy to be here and my family for running it and getting it involved, me and the club. If I didn't get the club running, I would have nothing to do.
Yeah.
So it's a good experience for a lot of people that had disabilities and people that had nothing else to do during the weekends, and it was great fun. Like, it's,
you've been part of the Northwest Special Olympics team now since 1998, isn't,
yeah,
it? So you're a veteran of the Special Olympics team.
Yeah.
Okay. And talk to me about the basketball team. It's from all over the country, is it?
Yeah.
And do you play in a particular position, or how does that work? I don't know nothing about basketball, so you're going to have to help me here.
I play defence, and sometimes I do side court and then middle court as well. So
you have to be around,
yeah,
the place, don't you? It's not like football,
no,
most sports now. You kind of have to be able to.
Yeah.
And how important is this, your first big competition, sorry?
Yes, this is my very big first competition, yeah.
So how excited are you?
So excited, can't wait.
And it runs from the 12th to the 24th of June in Berlin. What kind of preparation have you been going through to get ready?
I've been going to Dublin to train every once a month and with the coaches. Mm. So it's good to get up and train. It's hard too because you have to be strict on food and you can't eat like bad stuff. So you have to be good and go to bed early and get up early and train
you
hard.
You have to be dedicated to it, Johnny, because it's elite level because you're going to be playing against the best and you have to be... Do you know how many games you'll be playing as part of it? Is there groups initially, Vicky?
I say I probably play... I do training first, grading, see how I get on first, and then I could be playing two or three matches there when I get out there.
Mm. So. And as you say, you know, you can't enjoy things like the rest of us do. I'm sure you have the odd sneaky fizzy drink, but we'll not tell the coaches, right? Keep that under your hat.
Yeah.
But you, as you said, your diet's important, your sleep's important. And, you know, it could be roasting over there too. So you have to make sure you've got good resistance to all that, don't you? All right, it's very exciting, isn't it?
I can't wait.
All right, okay. So when do you actually travel out?
I travel out on the 12th.
Right, okay. You live in Berlin, effectively, for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, for 2 weeks, yeah.
Excellent stuff, okay. And this is a big event. It's going to be covered on TV and stuff as well. We don't know what games might be covered, but it is a major competition that's got eyes from all over the world on it. Not trying to make you nervous or anything, but I don't.
No, it's grand. Like, it's going to be
all.
I
don't think you have any nerves, do you? No, nope. You're loving it. Okay. Dad, you would see firsthand, Michael, you'd see the firsthand the dedication Vicky's putting into this.
Vicky's worked very hard. Like, her own club, the Northwest Special Olympics Club, Nicky Kennan is kind of the main cog there. And Nicky puts them through their paces every Saturday. They have a 2 hour session there, and then as Vicky said, traveling to Dublin over the past several months and training there with the coaches, the national basketball coaches who actually train the national basketball ladies team and the boys men's team as well. So she's really put a lot of effort into it. She does a lot of exercise, she walks, she's watching her intake of food, hydration, that type of stuff, you know. So.
Yeah. And Vicky, it's a little bit more difficult for you, perhaps, because you have to travel longer to get to Dublin for that training, don't you? I presume some of the team are around the capital, but it's, you know, yours is quite a long journey.
Yeah.
Do you mind the travelling?
No, it's grand.
Yeah.
Gets me out and seeing places too, so it's grand. Like.
And you know, you've been at it a long time, competing and all. Is this... level of training, is it up at a level or two? Are you finding that you happen to work much harder, Vicky?
It's more harder. It's more harder than what I'm usually doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what do your friends and neighbours around Kilmacrenan think that you're going on? I mean, we're talking about you representing Ireland, but really you're representing Kilmacrenan too, all right? So
I haven't said no to anybody yet. So
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they'll probably hear this now. They'll probably know.
Wow, fantastic. Yeah. So there a lot of people in the area are hearing this for the first time.
Yeah.
Brilliant. When did you get selected for the team?
January.
So it's going back a bit. So you've kept this a secret pretty much since then. Right, well, the secret is out.
Yeah.
Vicky, we're all going to be following your progress closely.
Yeah.
Michael, how many athletes and competitors from this region are travelling?
Vicky is the only athlete from Donegal, female athlete on the basketball team. She's also the only female athlete from Ulster.
Mm.
Most of the players are from Leinster and Munster. I think there's one from Connacht, but Vicky also plays for Ulster. You see the Ulster provincial team against in the provinces.
Yeah.
And she's been to Dublin for the national games and Limerick for the national games.
Brilliant. Know. Okay.
So they're competing at a fairly high level. You know.
Yeah.
There's over 4,000 athletes coming to Berlin.
There's 120 countries represented.
There's 120 countries represented there, and 4,000 athletes then plus their entourage. You know, trainers, coaches, physios, doctors.
Yeah.
So as you know, it was actually Vicky met Tim Kennedy Shriver, who is actually the chairman of the World Special Olympics. His mum, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, who was John F. Kennedy's the President of America's sister. It was her actually founded the Special Olympics, you know, yeah, in Ireland. Well, in the world.
Yeah, but they've gone on from strength to
strength.
And it's gone
on. And he was over here with Joe Biden just when he was here recently in Ireland. And actually, Vicky met him in Dungiven, in the club down there, you know, the Special Olympics club down there. And I got a photo with him, and a gentleman, a lovely man. You know.
And in terms of, you know, to send teams out there, it costs a lot of money too, doesn't
money.
It?
Yeah. A lot of sponsorship, big sponsorship from Sentra, sponsoring their clothing and their gear. And then Aer Lingus have a big input in it. But there were several companies around here, like we'd done the polar plunges, you know. Vicky was there doing presentations. There was the
Marines. Did you go in, Michael?
I didn't. I can't swim, believe it or not.
That's no excuse. You don't have to jump in over your head. You walk. Hold on a second. You walk it up to your waist, Michael. Didn't you head out?
I have.
No, he still wouldn't do it.
But Optum here, local groups, a couple of local companies here have also done
brilliant stuff. Okay, listen, it's been lovely having you in.
Thank you very much.
Vicky, the very best. Look, we're going to be following you, and I don't think you're going to be fit to walk through Kilmacrenna now without someone looking from a selfie. For you or whatever it might be, representing your village, of course, your county and your country. It's a remarkable achievement. There's so few of us could ever say that we've ever done or will be able to do. And you can count yourself amongst a small group of people that can don the jersey for Ireland. And we're so proud of you, and we wish you all the success. And you're flying the flag for Ulster and Donegal and Kilmacrenna and wherever you want to fly it. And well done to you, Michael, as well. We all need our support structures to get us to and from. So it's great to hear. All right, both of you, thank you so very much indeed for calling in.